This week on Straight Talk Africa, the U.S. presidential election is on November 5th. Both candidates, Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump, are in a final campaign sprint to win the White House.
In this moment, we do face a real question. What kind of country do we want to live in? What kind of country do we want for our children and our grandchildren? A country of chaos, fate, fear, and hate, or a country of freedom, justice, and compassion?
With your vote in this election, I will end inflation. I will stop the invasion of criminals coming into our country. And I will bring back the American dream.
The race is very close, with everyone watching the seven key battleground states that can sway the election to either side. How will the outcome of this U.S. election affect the U.S.-Africa relations? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCourry. Voters in the United States are heading to the polls on Tuesday, November 5th, to elect the next president. Early voting has already started, and the two presidential candidates are wooing undecided voters. Former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris are making a multitude of media appearances and public speeches as they head down to the final stretch of the election day. Tuesday night, Vice President Harris spoke in Washington, D.C., at the same location that on January 6, 2021, former President Donald Trump spoke to a frenzied crowd that later attacked the U.S. Capitol building. Meanwhile, former President Trump spoke in Florida and in Pennsylvania at a Building America's Future event. Now, for insight into the presidential election, I'm joined here in studio by two veteran journalists, VOA's White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara and VOA's Chief National Correspondent Steve Hammond. Welcome to both of you.
My pleasure to be here.
All right, now let me start with the lady. You know, you've been actually traveling around the country and covering the campaign rallies. If you may start with especially the foreign policy issue here. This is happening at a time when there is turmoil in the Middle East. We see war in Ukraine. How has that been addressed, or rather brought out in the campaigns by both sides?
Well, I think in general, foreign policy is not the number one issue for American voters, but this is a special election. As you pointed out, we are in the middle of U.S. involvement in two wars, one in the Middle East and one in Europe. I think especially for Trump voters, they are really buying into this idea of why are we spending our money, why are we spending our resources to the so-called endless wars that President Joe Biden campaigned on ending. So this is something that the Trump campaign really hones in on, saying, you know, that President Trump will stop these wars. Trump himself likes to say that he can end these wars in 24 hours. He has never explained how they will do that. But this is certainly something that the Trump campaign has stressed. On the Harris side, the issue is Gaza, right? Because as you know, progressives, young voters, Arab American, Muslim American voters, voters that are traditionally Democrats, they have a big issue. They have a big problem with this issue, and certainly in places like Michigan, where there's a high percentage of Arab Americans, this could really swing the vote against Harris. So foreign policy, not usually a big issue, but this time it's different.
Yes. Either way, you know, by and large, the elections are more local than foreign, right? Steve, you know, the election from all the polls indicate that they're going to be tight. We're at a time when this could be decided by certain states. And here we talk about swing states, you know, Pennsylvania, for example. If you can explain to our viewers, what are these states and why are they called swing states?
Yes, Vincent, as you mentioned, Pennsylvania is the key one because of the electoral vote system. You need to get to a certain threshold to be elected president. And Pennsylvania, of all the states where we're almost positive that they're either going to go for Harris or Trump, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan. Mm-hmm. Have I left any out?
Nevada.
There was Nevada, yeah. So there was talk about North Carolina, but North Carolina looks like it's secure in the Trump camp right now. So that's why I've been spending so much time in Pennsylvania, as have both of the candidates, because according to the statisticians, there's more than a 90% chance that if you win Pennsylvania, you will win this election.
Well, and so it's really a battleground state. Now, this question can be addressed by both of you. You mentioned the electoral votes. We know that all states except, I think, two, it's a winner takes it all. If you
Correct.
Win the majority, then you get the electoral vote. But first, we need to explain, what are the electoral votes, the electoral college, and how does it work?
I think it's different than where in most countries in the world where it's one man, one vote, right? So your popular vote counts. In the U.S., it's basically, even though in your ballot it says either Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, what you're actually doing is you're voting for electors who will then give their electoral vote to whichever candidate that they're tied to. But these rules are very different and very complicated and different in each state. So think about this. Think about the fact that in the United States, it's actually not one election, but 50 different elections, because each state has different rules about the way they count their votes, who can vote, and so on. And that aspect of the indirect vote of electoral college, you essentially have to have 270 to win out of the 540. And that's why, as Steve said, these battleground states, especially ones with big electoral votes like Pennsylvania that has 19, the biggest prize of them all, which is why, you know, everybody's concentrating on Pennsylvania right now. Some are saying this is the United States of Pennsylvania election right now, which is why that's so important.
And we should point out that one candidate could win the popular vote, but lose the electoral vote count. You have to get to 270.
Mm-hmm. And that gets very confusing sometimes to people abroad. But, you know, it's not only the candidates that have been working so hard to try to get their messages across. There are fellows in the shadows, and these are the guys working on misinformation. How critical is this at the moment, if I may start with you, Steve?
Well, there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there. Some of it is being generated domestically from people working on, not directly paid by the candidates, but supporting them. And then, according to the intelligence agencies and law enforcement in the United States, there are foreigners probably coming from Russia and other countries such as that who are trying to meddle into the process as well. And where this is a particular concern is, for example, with Spanish-speaking voters in the United States who seem to be getting a disproportionate amount of misinformation. And going back and talking about Pennsylvania, there's a large number of Hispanic voters in that state. And then there was some remarks the other day about Puerto Rico, which is an American territory, a commonwealth in the Caribbean. A lot of Puerto Ricans who cannot vote for president in Puerto Rico, but when they are U.S. citizens and when they come to the mainland, they can vote in those particular states. And so even these smaller minority groups could have a tremendous impact and could actually determine the outcome of the election.
Yes.
And the fallout from disinformation and misinformation is the threat of course, political violence. I have been covering U.S. politics, American politics, for over 2 decades now, and I don't think I've ever seen this level of anxiety and fear of political violence. I mean, this is something that I hear from analysts, something that I hear from voters, certainly something that I hear from journalists. Most of the political journalists that I know, including the two of us, have actually been trained in what's called the hostile environment training, the kind of training that they send war correspondents to in preparation for this election. So I'm not saying that election violence will happen, but there's certainly the danger and the concern for that.
And we're already starting to see some minor incidents, for example, in the states of Washington and Oregon. Some of the ballot boxes where you could drop off your votes in advance were set on fire.
Time runs out when we're just getting started. Thank you, Patsy and Steve, for your insight. We'll see you next week after the elections. Patsy Widok-Suara, VOA's White House bureau chief, and Steve Hammond, VOA's national correspondent. It's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion about the race for the White House. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
We believe that the future president must work to strengthen relations with various African countries, while at the same time bringing American policy in Africa back to the forefront. Given that there are other players appearing on the scene, including Russia, which has influence over three West African countries, Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger.
What the world urgently needs from the next American leader is a reduction in wars. Since World War II and the Cold War, the world has experienced an unprecedented level of fear about the possibility of a war involving nuclear weapons. The United States has significant influence over whether these weapons are used.
So I'm looking forward to some policies and initiatives concerning the trade that would see the growth of not just one country, but will see the prosperity of both countries.
We want win-win cooperation with the United States because Africa has suffered greatly and continues to suffer as our resources are exploited and we earn practically nothing.
We expect the President of America, who is going to assume office, to make sure that the wars that have been happening in the world should stop.
The first priority for Africa should be solving the issue of migrants who go abroad in search of a better life and often end up drowning at sea.
Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. We are discussing the race to Election Day on Tuesday, November 5th, and the efforts of both candidates to attract the undecided voters. For a moment, let's think big picture here. What will a Trump or Harris presidency mean for the United States and its position in the world and its relationship to Africa? I'm joined by Amy Dacey. She's the executive director of the Sign Institute of Policy and Politics at American University, and Kweku Nuoma, Professor of International Politics, also at American University. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to State of Africa.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Maybe just a little bit, I wanted, if you can indulge me, to talk a bit about, we pay a lot of attention to polls. People talk about polling and all that. To what extent do they actually present the most accurate picture? Because every media house sometimes refers to a different poll.
Well, we certainly spend a lot of time looking at the polls, but we have to, a reminder is they are a snapshot in time, and they don't always reflect, exactly who's going to the polls. I think they're a good indicator of trends, of seeing where things are moving. They are very tight. That means it is a very tight election. I think they're usually more often used by the campaigns themselves as a tool to decide where to move their candidate and where to move their resources. But it's certainly something that people look at as they're making their decisions.
Yes. And Professor Nuoma, we've mentioned that this election also is of interest, of course, to people abroad, but it's also happening at a time when a lot is happening in the Middle East and of course, in Europe. So in terms of who wins, what is likely to change in relation to foreign policy?
Well, for the rest of the world, you're likely to see more engagement if Kamala Harris wins. Trump has been pushing this America First agenda. But for Africa, there's serious implications because AGOA is coming up for renewal next year. Trump may not do it. PEPFAR is also coming up for renewal next year. He may not do it. Five African countries are having their temporary permission to stay in the United States renewed, and that may also be jeopardized under Trump. But general American foreign policy has been consistent when it comes to the way Africa is treated, because Africa is not such a priority area. But these things that are coming up, we can actually see some real difference depending on who wins the White House.
And for the rest of the world, we've been hearing the campaign trail, for example. One candidate says, you know, I'll deal in a much better way with the situation in the Middle East or even in Ukraine. But overall, sometimes people wonder, does the U.S. foreign policy shift so significantly with the change of the party in the White House?
Well, I think there's differences, especially in leadership style. And I just would add that, you know, as these conflicts are going on around the world, the decision, I think, next week is definitely about what leadership style do you want? Do you want somebody who embraces diplomacy? Do you want somebody who approaches these conflicts in a way to make sure that the humanitarian aid, you know, is going, that there's conversations with world leaders that, you know, are happening, that there's negotiations going on? And so I think that's kind of a striking contrast. The other thing that I would say is very important, that not only will the presidency change regardless, we are going to have a new president, Biden's not running for re-election, but we have races both in the Senate and the House that will matter with foreign policy. We will have, if the Senate becomes a Republican Senate, there are new committee chairs that might approach Absolutely. This differently. So no matter who the president is, there will be a new Congress that also will help shape some of these issues, and I think it's really important to consider that as we look toward next week.
And, of course, that usually is another aspect of the U.S. democracy that times during the election, people especially abroad may overlook, that the control of the House
Absolutely.
And Senate is critical also Yes. to the foreign policy and how it is shaped.
Yes, the type of Congress you get matters, because mm-hmm. that's how foreign policy is really made. Mm-hmm. So if you can get a president, for example, you can get Kamala Harris in there and get a Republican Congress, and nothing will get done. Unless it's a priority for the party. And so you're actually going to see changes there. But in terms of the bureaucratic approach to foreign policy, those things tend not to change because there are other interest groups that push for certain policies, and those things are going to generally be on board.
Yeah. Why you made an argument that the certain things may not happen mm-hmm. if, say, President Trump comes in. Why? Has he made any statements that would indicate Africa wouldn't be prioritized?
So I talked about Africa growth and opportunities. That it's on deck. It's about to be renewed.
Yeah.
He may or may not push for that. The area where you can see changes is PEPFAR, is the President's Special Initiative for HIV/AIDS Research in Africa, because there's a clause in there that it's got the Mexico City provision that prevents, under Republican administrations, it prevents any organization that is doing, abortion work from accessing that money. Mm-hmm. And so when Republicans come to power, they mm-hmm. put that clause in. When Democrats come to power, they take that out. So that's mm-hmm. really, really going to happen. If Trump wins, the Mexico City provisions will be back on board. And if you do even if you don't use American money, but you're doing abortion-related work, you can't access the PEPFAR money. When Democrats are in charge, that provision is gone. So for a lot of African health providers, they have to do all these services. And so that has real implication. And of course, all the countries that are up for having their permits to remain in this country renewed, Trump may not care about some of those countries. He's already talked about instituting a Muslim ban. That will affect a lot of Africans who are here. I haven't heard that from the Harris administration. I'm assuming that she's going to continue Biden's policy towards Africa. They made promises to Africa that have not been kept, and I'm thinking that if she gets in there, she may want to go back to some of those things as well. So there'll be real differences, but as she said, what happens on Capitol Hill also matters, because you can have a willing president and an unwilling Congress, and nothing will get done.
Mm-hmm. But policy, foreign policy can also be very complex. I mean, if we were talking about the approach to, for example, how to resolve issues like conflict issues, but also there's the relationship between the U.S. and China, U.S. and Russia. There's at all different levels, including economic engagements. So how do the different candidates articulate that to give confidence to the American people that whatever happens is actually going to be beneficial to them domestically?
Well, I think it's important that they, you know, you've seen Kamala Harris use the themes of certainly freedom, of moving forward, of talking about some of the values-driven propositions that really will help people understand what her vision is for moving forward. But at the same time, say that they are, you know, she's committed to definitely economic strength at home, to making sure people's day-to-day lives are really, you know, empowered and that they're focused on that. I think the big thing and the big, you know, difference here is that you have somebody with Trump who has a track record. People do know. I mean, he likes to run like an outsider who's never served before, but he has served for 4 years, and we know what he has done. Roll back, you know, provisions for women, definitely increased tax credits for you know, rich Americans so that people wouldn't benefit. So there's that track record. He also really hasn't, during this election, been very specific about what his plans are or what he plans to do this. So I think that, you know, these relationships internationally, we do have a global economy. We do have a global, you know, environment where they all matter and do this. And I think that definitely the Kamala Harris team is very recognized about how some of the decisions domestically can affect everything globally. I think the world is watching. The other thing that I would just certainly point out is it will matter what teams they build around them, you know, as president. I think you've seen during the Biden administration, certainly with Secretary Blinken and others, who are the individuals that Donald Trump is going to come in to be Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, you know, head of Treasury. These are important positions that also affect global relationships and what happens Absolutely. In the world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you end up with someone like Elon Musk in the government, and it's chaos all over the place. We saw Trump last time he was, you know, president. He brought people from corporate America who didn't have any public interest, you know, experience and public policy experience, and he thought that you could run the state and the government business like a corporate entity. But that's not true.
But
so
then there are millions of Americans who endorse that kind of approach, and in fact who think that he's good for business, and they look at probably trickle down mm-hmm. benefit of that kind
yes.
of a model of economics.
Yes.
So what would you say
that
to them? And they'll say that things used to be better then than now. I mean,
yes.
from their perspective.
And I don't think that most people understand how the economy really works. And again, a lot of what people give Trump credit for is actually the recovery that started under Barack Obama. He took credit for it. People forget that when Trump was leaving office, you couldn't buy toilet paper in America. That was his economy. The way he mismanaged COVID destroyed the economy. So when Joe Biden comes in, he has to do this stimulus, Keynesian-type stimulus, which then created inflation. And the way you fight inflation is by raising interest rates. So these are all connected. But if you're explaining that to the ordinary voter, you are losing. It's because ordinary voter is just thinking about, well, you know, my wages were high when Trump was in power and all those things. But you got to find a way to let people understand that this is, America came out of the COVID crisis better than any other major economy. And that's because of policies that were put in place by the Biden administration. So I don't think that they've taken credit for the recovery enough. And again, I don't know what her strategies are telling her, because she's been very careful not to embrace Biden too much. Yesterday's speech was the first time that I had a coherent separation argument, because she's been going back and forth about whether to embrace Biden or not embrace Biden. People ask her, how are you different? Yesterday she said, well, my government is going to be different because we face different challenges. And it was the first time that I had an explanation that makes sense. But you got to take credit for some of the good stuff that happened in the back, even if it comes to the baggage of having to explain to people why inflation is high.
But, Amy, don't things overlap, though? I mean, like an administration comes in, of course, the certain policies may roll on for some time, but then things happen. Sometimes you encounter war. You encounter, for example, COVID. And is it possible sometimes to make a very clear line as to, okay, this is
I think
up
you
to
inherit,
here, it was
sure,
so-and-so.
It's a good question. You inherit the good, you inherit the bad, and how do you interpret that? But I do think this is about, and it was a great point that she made, that she is going to, this is the snapshot in time. And, you know, come January 2025, that's when this new presidency begins. There are going to be new challenges. There are going to be challenges that haven't been, you know, reformed. But I do think that what the message that her team is putting out is that, you know, under a Donald Trump, it is a less than. You're less than. You're less than if you don't, you know, have children. You're less than if you are transgender. You are less than if you are at a certain economic point and need assistance from the country. And I think a lot of people don't want to be part of this less than, this you know, rhetoric, this divisiveness. So much of the polling that we've done at the Sign Institute and that you've seen, you know, in the States is people are tired of this divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And I think this constant, he's taking his playbook from 2016, you know, and trying to say, yes, there's an anger and an anxiety and an angst, but I know who's causing it and I know who to blame. And that just creates a division in the country.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, we have those, I'll bring that up. They're those who still think going back to his years in power, they fared better. And they think they're
absolutely
working, they're looking at a familiar kind of promise,
yes,
as opposed to the uncertain, the unknown from the other side.
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously,
it's her job to remind people of how chaotic things were under his government. I remember seeing him on TV telling people to drink detergents when COVID was raging.
Yes.
It's her job to go out and remind that this guy,
yeah,
you know, he's been, you know, found guilty 34 times. He's been, he's on tape soliciting a bribe from the president of Ukraine. He's on tape trying to rig an election in Georgia.
But for the voters,
all those things.
For some of the voters, they would, of course, point also to the things that happened in the past, you know, that Democratic candidates were accused of, including, of course, say, way back with Hillary Clinton. So isn't it just kind of a question of how the voters perceive what is seen as the wrongs of the other side, and how they can balance that with the what they see as beneficial policy from any candidate?
Well, all campaigns are a conversation with voters,
yeah,
you know, and what changes is who's having the conversation, what the conversation's about, and what tools you're using to have that conversation. But in this conversation that we're having here in this 2024 election, yes, there are some people who do think that they, you know, lived in a better environment, you know, with Trump. Has he hit a ceiling? You know, is he only reached the number of voters that he can. You saw things that you don't always see. You saw very high-level Republicans and Republican operatives, lists of over 200 say, this is not the country I want to live in. This is a direction. His own people who, you know, worked for him said that, you know, he's dangerous. I think the other thing that we haven't mentioned yet but will play a huge role in this election is the gender gap.
Mm-hmm.
She needs more women to vote for her, you know, and he's and she's seeing, you know, large quantities of women that, you know, are supporting her. More women will vote. They did traditionally vote in larger numbers in 2020. And the, you know, issues that are resonating with them are around abortion, are around economy, around stopping this, you know, rhetoric. So there are pockets of opportunity. It does boil down, because we have an electoral college system, to seven states that will matter in the math. But as you're talking to those pockets of voters, I do think her speech last night, you know, she understood the assignment last night and really talked through some of these important things to try and close this deal, try to get people out to vote. She had to remind her supporters that you still have to vote, like, you know, a promise to vote is not an actual vote. Please go out and vote. And I think that happened. But also, she was speaking to everybody. And the mere statement that if I win, I will represent all of you is very important. Because I think Donald Trump, that was really one of the first times that I saw a president who only feels like he represented the people that voted for them. And that's very dangerous in a democracy.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. We have to leave it here. Thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Amy Dacey is the executive director of the Sign Institute of at American University, and Kweku Nwoma is a professor of international politics also at American University. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. Check out Straight Talk Africa on social media. Like us on Facebook, follow us on X. Watch us also on YouTube at VOA Africa, and let us know what you think. I'll see you next time.